Okay, the next speaker is Sven Erik, is it Grinning? Yep, from the Technical University of Denmark.
Okay, thank you. And I will talk about variable distributions and how we measurements of variable distribution. But first, I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, which is Ekaterina Batsvarova, Roche Flore, and Alfredo Pena from the DTU Wind Energy and NIM in Bulgaria. So the outline is that I will show some results from measurements, not modeling so much, of some of the characteristics that is for wind energy. This is about LiDAR measurements, and then I will discuss how we use LiDAR measurements, the sensitivity to what we call the carrier-to-noise ratio. And at the end, I will use the results to discuss the variable distribution parameters at different types of topography over land and in a coastal in a marine environment. And the first I show here is actually what it all is about. I'm happy that Wu Xiang also showed the variable distribution and discussed the importance of it, and because I think Mark Sagai yesterday mentioned that a lot of people only think about whether we have a lot of wind or we don't have so much wind, and consider it as the mean wind, you can say. If that's high, it's good. But it's not really the way you look at it when you're doing sort of the analysis, because then you look at the distribution of the wind, as we can see here. We don't have a laser pointer, do we? No, okay. And because what is characteristic you all know is that roughly the power goes to the wind speed cubed, 2.5 or cubed. And that means that the distribution becomes quite important, because although some of the high wind speed are not so often measured, they actually contribute quite a lot to the potential wind energy or to the wind energy. So it's important to know your distribution. And that means that we go into a world where we go away from the mean wind speed, and we call it A and K, the parameters of the variable distribution. But first I will show you a little about how we measure this variable distribution. And we have this instrument called a wind LiDAR that is quite used by many people. And I've had the pleasure to be able to measure with such a device for some years now. I will just very slowly show the principle of the wind LiDAR, because it's actually quite fantastic when you think about it. The idea is that you send a pulse of light out from a laser, 1,500 nanometers about. And this pulse goes up, and then it meets some barrier, a particle of some kind, and some of it is backscattered. So first of all, you send out a pulse of energy, and you get very, very, very little energy back from the backscatter. And but because this pulse meets an aerosol or a particle, and we assume, and that's a good assumption, that the air particle has the speed of the air, actually the returned backscatter has a Doppler shift. So all you do is that you estimate the Doppler shift. And that is actually shown that it's quite accurate to do this. You do a lot of measurements because the speed of light is, of course, very fast. And here we have some comparisons we really need between a sonic anemometer to the left and a wind LiDAR with the wind speed to the left panels and the wind directions to the right panels. And you can see it's actually a very good comparison. The wind direction is shifted a little, but it's, of course, easy to correct this. This is done what we call with a CNR, the carrier-to-noise ratio of minus 22. And this has been a traditional value that has been used, going back to some work 10, 15 years ago, in order to secure what we call good measurements. We should not have measurements that are affected too much by noise. And you can also show that if you filter the data with a CNR, this carrier-to-noise ratio, it can be shown that the higher the value, the better the quality of the measurements. And I will discuss some of the consequences of this. But in doing this, I will mentioned that we did some measurements with a LiDAR. You can see the LiDAR to the right, lower right there. It's actually a very small device. It can measure up to a 1 kilometer, today probably even more. And we did measurements at three sites. Høsøre, the upper left, is a coastal site. Then we have an urban site in Hamburg and a marine site here. And we did the measurements for about a year because we want to have the annual statistics over it. And here you can see that the left is this coastal site. The dark point there is the position of the LiDAR, and we also have a meteorological mast there. We always have this at these places because the LiDAR starts to measure at 100 meters, but then we can complement the profile up to 100 meters from the meteorological mast. It's positioned about 2 kilometers inland. So in this case, we have two possibilities. We have the wind from the east, which represent land conditions, and when the wind is from the west, you can see you have the development of an internal boundary layer, and therefore you can see what is the effect and what's the difference between the internal boundary layer and the sort of homogeneous upwind. The figure to the right is an illustration of the Hamburg side. So how much do we measure with this LiDAR? Yeah, this is the frequency, and you can see we have splitted it in Høsøre coastal and Høsøre land. Høsøre coastal means wind from the sea reaching the land, and it's not so bad. I should say that this was one of the first LiDARs in this series that were produced, so we had some technical problems, as you always have. But the frequency is fairly good. On the Høsøre land, you can actually see that we did the vacation there. There were some problems in July and August, but otherwise, it's a pretty. It's about 80%. In Hamburg, we also have about 80%, and for some reason, at Fino 1, it worked extremely well, and this is a platform, and we are 80%. What I'm going to show here now is that when you do the analysis, it's not. This was at 100 meter. It's important to analyze the whole profile. You cannot just. You should have the same numbers of points in the whole measurements in all the positions in the profile, which in this case goes up to 600 meters. And here on the Høsøre land, for example, you can see that we have a coverage of 84% at 100 meter. But if you look at the total profile up to 600 meters, the coverage goes down to 75%. And similar for the other ones, you have a reduction from 100 meter, and you need all the measurements, you actually have a reduction to 67 or 70% here. So what does that mean? Here we have the data availability as a function of this carrier-to-noise threshold, which is a kind of a noise, how good the signal is, you can say. 100% is all the LiDAR measurements in this case. And it's the whole profile up to 600 meters. You have some that are blue and some that are red. The blue, shall we start with the red ones? The red ones is the Hamburg case. This is an inland case. The other one is Høsøre land, means that the wind is coming from over land, the rural area, hits the tower. Then you have the blue ones. One is Fino 3. We are lucky to have Fino 3. And you see, actually, there are much more measurements. If you have a CNR threshold of minus 20, you have about 50%. 50% means a much lower threshold over land. So what we see here is that they actually this suggests that the wind LiDAR is actually working better when there is sea in a marine environment than in a land environment. And we have the assumption we have is that it's because there are a production of marine aerosols, or there are more aerosols in the air that can backscatter the signal than over land. So it's a perfect instrument for offshore wind profile measurements, much better than over land. So what's the next one? Okay, I will just very slowly show you the viral distribution here, because this is sort of the workhorse we have. I would like to mention that we have sometimes been asked, why do we use a viral distribution? And we do this because it's simple, and it gives a good representation of the data. I mean, there are no theoretical basis for it. It's purely empirical. Now you know. But it's characterized by two parameters, the so-called shape scale parameter. And you can see it's very, very closely connected to the wind speed. So if you have A, you also, in a way, have the, almost have the wind speed, the mean wind speed. And then there is the shape parameter. And the shape parameter is illustrated here for various values. And it's characteristic that that a small shape parameter has a wide distribution. Just remember that. A big shape parameter, a narrow distribution. So here we have an example. This is from Hamburg, but it could be any of the places. To the left, you see the wind profile. No, I have a... Okay, okay. To the left, you see the wind profile. And for filtered with three different CNR values. And you can see there's a clearly function, there's a clearly dependence on the CNR. And that's, of course, not so nice. That means that you get one wind profile if you filter with one CNR. The more poor data you introduce, not so good data you use, it changes the wind profile. There's a connection between the mean wind speed and the CNR. And this is illustrated to the right, where you can see that the upper black curve, for example, is the mean wind speed at Finus 3. And you can see that actually if you would filter with minus 20, or minus 22, you would come up with a higher wind speed than if you filter with the minus 35, which is in our case all the measurements. It's very it's very pronounced over the sea. It's less pronounced over the land. So if you use a wind light or use all your measurements, also the measurements you don't think, you cannot just say we take out the good measurements and then think they are from a random distribution. They're not. The reversal height, I will come back to what the reversal height is, but this is basically on the left the viable shape parameter. And that gives the width of the distribution. And you can see actually there is the maximum in the profile is a function of the CNR. It's illustrated to the right. Again, we have Hamburg here. If you use high CNR values, you get a high reversal height, and then it is lowered, and at a certain time, it becomes near constant. The effect is also seen at Høsøre land, and it's not so pronounced in the coastal for reasons we can come back to. So this is a measured function of the viable shape parameter over land. These are two examples. The left is from Hamburg. The right is from Høsøre over land. And you can see it has a very, very characteristic shape. First of all, the measurements are neatly, it's a very nice curve we have here, actually. I was surprised to see the measurements actually scatter. That was wonderful. It's characteristic that that the value is small near the surface, then it increases, has a maximum around 100, 150 meters, and then it starts to decrease again. So you can also see here that the maximum is higher over Hamburg as compared to Høsøre land, which has a much lower roughness. So there is a roughness dependence in the reversal height. Below that, I have illustrated in a sort of more intuitive way. You see that, for example, at 30 meters during the night, during the night over land, it's not blowing so much. So therefore, you have a low wind speed because of the stable atmosphere. Then the sun goes up, you have a mixing, and the wind speed increases because you get a better access to the geostrophic wind, and then it decreases again. If you go a little further up, in this case 50 meters, you still have low during the night, high during the day. But then you reach 150 meters, you see actually the wind speed does not increase so much. It's a near constant. And when you go above that, you actually have a dip during the day and you have a higher wind speed during the night. So you have to consider this, that actually if you put a wind turbine at this reversal height, it produces about statistically the same during the day and night. You find the same over land at Høvsøre, just it's lower. What does that look like over the sea? Okay. In the sea, we take the coastal there, and we take this the marine there. You see, you don't have this so much pronounced, especially not over the marine at the Finusui there. It's a sort of the same structure throughout the day. Why we have this structure, I don't know. It can be maybe found out. But you don't have this that it's low, and you don't have this characteristic daily variation over the sea. It's completely different. And you can also see it's reflected in the shape parameter that actually over the sea we don't have the maximum, at least down to the measurements where we are doing. We're doing the measurements there at 50 meters at Finusui. The maximum has not occurred, so we think that it continues the whole way down. So we need an idea about curves through this parametrization of the K profile. And we started with Wieringer in 89 in a very fundamental work where he produced this expression here that gave the maximum there. But Wieringer did not have measurements up to 100 and 200 meters, so he could only verify it in the lowest part. So we have, in a way, normalized this one, played a little round it, and then we have added a second term on it. And the second term actually modeling the part that is above the maximum. And this is my last one. This is how these two terms are playing together. You can see that term one is, in a way, the Wieringer, you can say, basically, and term two is our addition to it. And you can see that in Hamburg, with a high roughness, the term one is actually the most important. It, in this case, takes about 90% of the variability of the shape parameter here. Where at the when you go over land, the reversal height goes down, so actually the upper part becomes more important, and you can see how it goes in here. Coastal is the purple one. In a marine, we don't know whether it's a maximum, actually. So I have assumed, or we have assumed in our paper, that the maximum is at 10 or 15 meters, but it's just assumption. We don't have measurements. In this case, you can see, we see that the K profile is basically controlled by a second term. And I think that this is quite interesting, that we have these very different K profiles there over the offshore and onshore. And then I will say thank you for your attention. I will say one of the things that is very good here that we found out some years ago, that the K profile is excellent to check models. Because over land, the model should show the characteristic shape of the K profile. And over sea, it should produce the maximum in the K profile in a realistic way. And in a paper we did some years ago, we used, among other things, the YSU scheme. It was very clear that was something completely wrong with the K profile when you used the YSU scheme, when the Mün scheme worked much better when we compared measurements with the Wharf modeling results. And of course, later we found out that it was a mistake in the YSU scheme. It did not represent the stable layers correctly. When that was rerun with a new one, it worked much better. So we knew there was something wrong with the YSU scheme, but we didn't know what it was. So thank you. So it's a very good to test with the K profile. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Is there any time for one question? Okay, thank you very much, Sven Erik.